On today's episode, Liz and I have an amazing discussion with Jeff and Tammy Hill. We discuss all kinds of tips related to remarriages and stepfamilies, from prenuptial agreements and avoiding triangle disagreements, to discipline and decisions about where to live. This episode is a must listen if you're thinking about remarriage or you're already in the middle of the stress and struggles of stepfamily living. Jeff and Tammy Hill have been enjoying the ups and downs of remarriage and stepfamily living for 17 years. Together, they have 12 children, and both recently retired from teaching at Brigham Young University. They both continue to stay busy, Jeff helping with money workshops and Tammy as a licensed marriage and family therapist, and conducting Making Love retreats, honeymoon workshops, and dating boot camps. Most importantly, the Hills love being parents, step-parents, and grandparents. We hope you enjoy the show. Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Stronger Marriage Connection. I'm Dr. Dave here at Utah State University alongside Dr. Liz Hill, our licensed clinical psychologist. Hey, we're bringing you the best we have in marital research and some resources, some tips and tools to help you create the marriage of your dreams. All right, I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to bring back Tammy Hill to the show and excited that her husband, whom I've known for more than 20 years, I had a class with Dr. Jeff Hill. He's here alongside his wife, Tammy. We're going to tackle the topic of remarriage today. So from preparation to keeping the love alive, Jeff and Tammy Hill, welcome to the Stronger Marriage Connection podcast.
Thank you. We're great. And we're really excited to be here.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave and Liz.
Likewise.
Oh, so excited for our discussion. Hey, first, we're grateful that you made time for us today. We know busy schedules with children, grandchildren. Remind us, how many children and grandchildren do you have together?
We have 12 children and 40 and a half grandchildren.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that is more than full time. Love it. Okay, Jeff and Tammy, it may be helpful for our listeners to kind of get a better background, an idea of your remarriage stories, as far as just a quick background of your previous relationships and kind of how you came together.
Okay. So my late husband, Mark Mulford, and I lived with our four children in St. George, Utah. And Mark was a basketball coach and teacher, and he had an unexpected massive heart attack when he was 44 years old. And our baby girl was 4 months old at the time, and our oldest son was 15. And so we went through a big shock. It was horrible, so hard. And but I have amazing children, and the four of them are just my dearest friends. Even to this day, we've worked hard and done a lot of hard things together. And there's a lot of deep connection that we have and that we share. I was single for about 5 years before I remarried Jeff. And I met Jeff. It's a real long story and we don't have time for that, but I met him in a miraculous way. We'll just say that. And we were married about 6 months after we met.
And my background was that my wife Juanita and I had 8 children. I was a professor at BYU and she contracted cancer. And after a few years of struggling and fighting that, why she passed away, and I found myself a single dad with 8 kids. And it was a miraculous story of how we got together. I've got to give you a 30-second version of it.
Oh, I want to hear it.
Basically, Tammy, right before my wife passed away, I wrote an Ensign article for the April 2006 Ensign called The Proclamation, A Guide, A Comfort, and an Inspiration, talking about how God had been good to us even through a lot of trials. Tammy was in her jacuzzi with a handful of chocolate chips reading the Ensign, and she read my article. She had an impression several times to write a comment to the Ensign, so the next day she did, and it was forwarded back and forth such that the day she wrote the comment, We had interacted several times, and one thing led to another, and we found ourselves remarried.
The enzyme forwarded it to him, and I was so surprised because I'm just not a big, all my life I wasn't a BYU fan. I wasn't going to get involved with BYU people. And
it's so funny,
then I ended up falling in love and marrying and then teaching there. So it's just life turned around.
Isn't that something? I think it was the chocolate chips and the jacuzzi that really helped you, Jeff, just so you know.
That was it. That's the magic that started right there.
He always has to add the chocolate part.
Yeah.
So I'm transparent. I love sweets.
Well, we love having you on again, Tammy. We had a wonderful visit with you about sexual intimacy. And I know that, of course, that plays an important role in remarriage as well. But today we turn our focus a bit more towards preparing for remarriage to start things off. You have some pre-remarital essentials you think are really important. So let's dive in. What are some of those essentials, please, Jeff and Tammy?
I think when you're remarrying with children, is to realize it's different. This courtship is different than it was the first time. This time, yes, we're falling in love, and that's important. And we know, we may know that we want to get remarried, but we have to consider what is the effect that this will have on the children. It's very important to consider the effect on the children rather than it's just about us. And so and even in the courtship process, it's important, I believe, to kind of shield your children from the fact that you're dating or that you're getting serious, and that the point of introducing the children is when you really think that this might lead to a remarriage, and then they can be involved in the practice. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I felt the same way. I didn't want my children to get confused, and so I waited until I was fairly certain something would happen before I introduced Jeff. And then definitely you want to spend time together with your children to observe him or her and how they relate to your children and how your children interact with each other. One of the things that the research holds up and that we did is it's best to find, if possible, a new home to live in, not to go to her home or to his home, but to combine resources and get a new family home. That way it's a fresh start for everyone. And sometimes it's just so hard for a family that's lived in a home to all of a sudden need to share this space with a whole new family. A woman in particular, kind of her home is where her fingerprints are, you know, that's her place. And so when it's not even her home initially, it has a lot of history there that kind of makes it feel a little awkward. So we think it's important to get a new resident together if possible.
And in any remarriage, there are going to be ghosts from previous experiences and everything. And the way you can, the more you can do to keep those ghosts out of your relationship, the better. And one of the best ways to do that is not to be in the place where one of the families was before. When Tammy and I were dating, we were approaching when we were going to get married. We wanted to have good time with each other's siblings. So I went on a backpacking trip with Tammy and a number of my children. And that trip was a really important factor in my knowing that remarriage would be a good thing for my children. And Tammy took me on a trip to Nauvoo with her children, and that was a very good experience as well. And in fact, we ended up getting engaged on that trip.
We think it's important also to have a prenuptial agreement in a second marriage, that your original children, your original family, that the financial assets that you've created with their parent is preserved for them. And so we believe that it's important to get a prenuptial agreement.
And it's much more important than in a first marriage. Usually in a first marriage, there aren't really a lot of assets to worry about. But Brent Barlow, who was in my department, came into my office after my wife had passed away. And he said, "You're not going to want to hear this, but you're going to date and you're going to remarry because you don't work out well as a single person." So he said, "I want you to remember this, that when you find that person and before you get remarried, you get a prenuptial agreement where everything that you and Juanita worked for is guaranteed to be for your children and likewise for the person that you're going to marry." Because he said, and I believe, lots of children believe when they're having a hard time in remarriage, which they always do, will believe that the new spouse married their parent for their money. And so when you can clearly say all these retirement funds, everything belongs to you. And so with Juanita and I, that's how we did it. Everything after the day we were married is common, but everything until the day we were married belongs separately, which is interesting in that this house that we're in right now, it's owned half by me and my eight children and half by Tammy and her four children. And we joke about which half do we get? The
I can see the wisdom in that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's smart. What about any shared beliefs? I mean, you come with different beliefs about what this is going to be like.
Yeah, you have no idea what it's going to be like.
And we were professionals. We had no idea.
I know. Yeah. It was, Jeff thinks the hardest time for him was after his wife passed away. Hardest for me was when we were blending and had all these kids at home, especially about the first 4 to 5 years. Years is right. It takes a long, long, long time. And you think that you've gotten down, you know, it's like peeling an onion. And you keep peeling and you think you finally gotten to the center. But even just yesterday, we had something come up and we're starting to peel a little bit again. And we've been together 17 years. So it's just, it's hard. It's very hard. I would say, and I tell people that come in for remarital counseling, first of all, find someone and go to remarital counseling together, at least 4 sessions. But I tell them, I believe it's imperative that you absolutely know without a doubt that this is what you need to do, what God needs you to do, what you believe is the right thing to do, because that is too hard. There's no way you can keep doing it unless you have something to fall back on that's going to keep you pretty steady and in the work.
And so that harkens to a shared principle of being able to stick with something, having a long-term perspective. Realize that when things go south for a while, you have the faith. I guess it's faith that you share faith. You share faith that things are going to happen, things are that you can't even imagine are going to happen. And they do. But we have to have the faith that we could, that things are eventually going to work out. So I think having that shared faith, and we believe it's faith in the Lord Jesus Christ, that's our religious tradition, that having that shared faith is fundamental. Because I think, as Tammy mentioned, both of us, if we hadn't had rock solid revelation that this was what we were to do, it would have been, we would have had some shaky times.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I mean, go ahead, Tim.
Well, we still did have shaky times. So I want to make sure to correct that. Even though we had that revelation and that surety, there are times that I had to go back and hold on to that this is exactly what I need to be doing right now.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of other decisions, you know, where to live and who's going to, all this division of labor. Some of these are similar to first marriages, but now you have so much more that you're you're thinking about processing. How did you even decide, okay, this is where we're going to live?
I was just married to a really smart person who just said, we need to live in a new place. And I thought, oh, okay, we can do that. For me, it just seemed natural. Oh, I should just stay in my house. You know, we've got our house paid for. It's right here, everything. But had we done that, it would have been a really bad decision. And so you just have to deal with those things. And you have to deal with a lot of things that are the same with first marriages, but they're just exacerbated because there are children involved. A counselor that was trying to kind of talk us out of getting married said that the numbers would show with the number of children that we were bringing together and that they were from both households, we had about a 20% chance of still being married 5 years later. And so you have to realize, oh, it must be really difficult. But I think it's important to celebrate the successes that you have.
And Dave, there's just, you asked, how did we decide where to live? So Jeff was, at the time we met and remarried, I was not working. I was home full time with my children. And so I moved to Orem, which is where he lived, and we bought a home here. And I think you just day by day, as decisions come up that need to be made, you talk together, pray together, logistically try to decide what's going to be best for our situation right now, and just try the best that you can to make the decisions that will work. And sometimes it ends up that you learn a lot because you made the wrong decision. And other times you realize, oh yeah, we got this one right. So it's just a day by day thing, that like in every family life, you just kind of make decisions as you go along living.
We'll be right back after this brief message. And we're back. Well, let's dive right in. Yeah. Wow, man. I mean, there's so much to juggle and balance and roles and responsibilities, a lot to discuss, which can be both fulfilling and stressful. We know from the research that over 50%, you know, it's up to 60%. And in Jeff, you mentioned when you had a lot of children and situations and more, you know, a therapist says, well, you got about a 20% chance of making this work. So you put in a ton of work and a ton of faith and patience, and you put this all together. Do you have some tips and advice for keeping the love alive in remarriage? I'm guessing some things are the same, right, as a first marriage, but many are unique to remarriage and stepfamily living, right? Can we start each with the couple relationship? You know, what are some things that you do to keep the connection strong when you have a lot of other demands that are important demands on your time? How do you go about doing that?
Well, early on, when we got married, we were newlyweds. You know, yes. We had not had our spouses for a long time, and it was so fun to be in love and to kiss and to touch and to have all that energy, sexual energy that you have in early marriage. And yet my children couldn't stand me watching me get excited about Jeff, and his children couldn't stand him, you know, being excited about me. So we really couldn't demonstrate a lot of affection out in public in our home. And so I made a mantra up that we used for a long time, that if we hold on, I really believed it too, that if we hold on tight to each other, Jeff, I think in the end, they'll all end up holding on to us. So we just tried to really hold on to each other. We would often meet in the mudroom to kiss when Jeff would get home from work. A lot of times, especially early on, I just needed to have more than just a 10-second kiss in the mudroom. So we'd come upstairs to the bedroom and lock the door and lay on the bed, just even for 5 to 10 minutes, and hold each other and look in each other's eyes, reassure that, yeah, I'm here for you. You're here for me. We've got this. And that really helped me.
I think the mud room, it just wasn't enough.
Yeah.
You hit me at the mud room.
But it's nice. It made me look forward to coming home from work because we just have our own space there for a minute or two and could connect. And I think that those rituals of coming and going, they're important in any marriage, but I think particularly in remarriage, they're essential to just know when you walk in the room that your spouse loves you, even though you're having a lot of trouble with kids or this or that or the other thing, that they love you. But along those lines, we made an extra effort to just get out of the house and leave the kids at home. We had kids that were older that they could watch themselves.
And the younger ones.
And the younger ones, right. And so we kept a list of all of our honeymoons, and I think we're on like 97. We've gone away 97 times.
Gee, that's,
and we that's found really, if we could go away for two nights anywhere, just being together, it would kind of
reset us,
right? So that we remembered why we got married, and it's really, really was really exciting.
Yeah.
And it was those getaways.
I apologize. When you're away from the home and no one's watching, you can be as affectionate as you want. And that was really, you know, it's such a big part of marriage is that touch and the romantic, affectionate, that touch that you share. And when you can't really demonstrate that freely at home, it's really important to be able to find space to do that.
Love it. I love that tip, Jeff and Tammy. Still to this day, I look forward to just getaways from with my wife and I. We have four kiddos and one, you know, that's in high school, our last one. And so it just feels like getting out of this house even and going away somewhere for a little bit of just us two. It just does something for that. Re-energizes that relationship, gives you more energy and connection, strengthens that when you come back. Then you can tackle the stresses and struggles. That's what I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Totally.
That's right. You have to make that time to rejuvenate.
And I think one thing that would be helpful, loyalty is big. Children have deep loyalty to either the divorced or the dead spouse and their parent. And so instead of feeling threatened as the step parent by that loyalty that they feel, acknowledging that that's really normal, that they should feel this way about this parent, and there still needs to be respect and, you know, high functioning as far as being obedient and kind and working together. But it's okay that you're not going to be as close to your stepchildren as you are to your biological children. And sometimes I think step parents that I've worked with feel guilty that they don't love their stepchildren as much as they think they should, because their biological children are just so embedded in their hearts. And I believe that, I don't know, I feel very much like a couple of Jeff's kids that I really raised. I feel very much like they are like my children. But a lot of times you don't ever have that deep of a love and connection to a stepchild. And that's normal and it's okay.
Mm-hmm. And Tammy did, like Tammy mentioned, she did have those feelings, especially for the younger of my children. And she's got to tell this little story about when she was remembering the birthdays of all of the children.
Oh, I am. One Sunday evening, we'd been married maybe 3 or 4 years, and the kids were saying, tell me when I was born about it. And so I was just telling their birth stories. I was sitting around, and then Seth, which is Jeff's youngest child, said, well, Mom, tell me my birth story. And I was thinking and I was thinking and it took like 20 seconds. And then I said, Seth, I wasn't around when you were born. And we both said, oh yeah, that's right. You know,
you'd forgotten almost, right? Oh yeah. You had a different kind of birth story, right? How old was he? 3? How old was he when you
When we got married, he was 8.
He was 8. So I could tell you about your birth story at 8, right? When I got you at 8. Oh, that is very sweet. You know, I love that you refer to step families as, instead of blended, you prefer stewed. I really love that word. To say a little bit more about why stewed is more appropriate than blended, Tammy and Jeff.
Well, when you picture blended, to me, it's something that's been mixed in a blender. It comes out smooth, emulsified, just perfect. And that is not how step families are.
And you can't expect it.
No. And so when people say blended, I kind of cringe because I understand that's what we all call it. But I think it's more like stew. You've got chunks of Hills and you've got chunks of Mulfords and they're all in this sauce but they have integrity that's different. And it's okay that they're not blended all perfectly together.
So the ingredients, the meat and potatoes and carrots and stuff, they're distinct and they gravitate about one family or the other. But then there's a sauce that brings us all together.
Mm-hmm. Sure is.
Is the kind of,
well, you know, within that sauce, how did you handle discipline with your kiddos? Mm-hmm. Jeff, you talked to your kids. Tammy, you talked to yours or each other's. How did that go?
Well, how did we or how should we have?
Sure. All of it.
The principle, you know, when like Tammy's children would be acting disrespectful to her, in all of my history, it was the father's job to step in and tell them that they needed to respect their mom. And so discipline in that way. And so when I would do that, it would totally backfire. I mean, they would get so mad at me. And then also Tammy would get mad at me. You know, what are you doing? And I'm going to handle my own. And so the principle is that I eventually learned, and which is right, is that in most cases, discipline should be for your own biological children. The biological parent should be the one that's disciplining in most cases, unless there are some extenuating circumstances. And when we did it that way, it worked out a lot better.
For me, a principle that I teach all the time when I was teaching at BYU and also in my therapy is staying out of triangles. I'll give you an example. There was one time Jeff's daughter came in and was talking to me about my younger son and how frustrated she was with him. And so I listened to her and I empathized with her and I said, you know, it would be best for you to go ahead and talk to him about that. I'm happy to join you, but you need to be the one to talk to him about it, not me. That needs to come from you. And that made her very upset. And that's okay. We want someone else to take care of our problems. Even at our age, we want someone else to take care of our problems.
But so true.
The worst thing, I think, especially in big step families or step families, is to get mixed up in each other's triangles. You know, if someone comes to you talking about someone else, the best thing you can do is say, you know what, I'm sorry that's happening, but it would probably be the best thing for your relationship to go ahead and talk to them one-on-one and resolve that as best as you can. Because what you're doing is trying to invite me to collude with you against this other person. And that's not a healthy family. And so I say, stay out of triangles. Just stay out of triangles.
Yeah. Really wise. Yeah. I love that idea. Stay out of the triangles because that can get really messy. I'm curious, do you have other tips, suggestions when it comes to remarriage and step family living? For example, remarriages are always formed from a loss from a divorce, a loss from death. How do you and your children manage those losses in the present moment? And I'm sure it's different for children are different and different ages, you know, when both of your spouses passed away. Talk to us a little bit about what that was like as far as tips and going through that, managing some of that pain, that loss, that emptiness maybe, and this maybe resentment and things that go through your and your children's minds.
I think the fundamental principle is to honor the previous family. honor the original family, honor it, to recognize that nobody wished that, that things didn't work out with that original family. And so, you know, an example is on Mark's birthday, why we make, we don't make, Tammy makes his favorite meal, beef stroganoff, and we have it and we talk about Mark, and especially her younger two children didn't really know him. They were very
young. They had no memories of him.
And so this, and to realize that, that we're all supportive of learning about Mark and honoring him and remembering all of his good qualities and stuff, and them seeing that I'm not threatened by that, that it's fine to do that. We want to do that. In one of the children's bedrooms, and this is something when you remarry, the pictures you have on the wall, you have to redo family pictures on the wall. And Tammy had this giant picture of their family. And so it's in, was in her daughter's bedroom, and it's there, and that's great. And it's kind of like in the children's bedrooms, we made sure that they had pictures and other things to remember their parents for. And Tammy's really good about this. She'll post about Juanita on Facebook or something. And with Juanita, she loved to eat ice cream. So we celebrate her birthday. Every child got a half a gallon of ice cream that they could just sit down and eat. And so I think that's important. So honoring the past, honoring the original family, be open about the goodness of the original parents, you know, that are no longer there.
And talk about them if they, I think it's important to keep talking about them. Mm-hmm. Now, in divorce situations, I think that there can be a lot of dynamics that get a lot stickier than when it's a death situation. And so in some of those situations, it might look different than it looks for us.
But still so crucial, right? Like Father's Day, Mother's Day, to really help your children honor that other parent. That's the only mother they have, right? Or the only father they have in divorce situation, right? I think divorced parents can go a long ways to really better that relationship.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I agree too.
I wish that
bygones aside.
Yeah, don't you wish you could help them all just grow up really fast? If you divorce, you've got to grow up because that's such a mess.
I think another tip that I would say is, remarriage and having stewed families or blended families or whatever, it's going to be a up and down process. I mean, there are going to be good times and there are going to be bad times. And the natural tendency when you have a bad time is that things are going to just fall apart. And so one practice that I've had and I've suggested to others in this situation is like, every 6 months or so, just look back and say, on the whole, are things better than they were 6 months ago? And I think without exception, we could say every 6 months that things were better than they were. Have we arrived? No, we've got a long ways to go. But I think that's how life is. It's a trajectory. If you're on the right trajectory, you celebrate that, even though things aren't that great right now, you know.
Right now, they're not great.
No, even though.
Yeah. I'm learning something here.
Yeah. Well, isn't that? That's the truth for all relationships, right? Original ones, stewed ones. It's for all of us when we have those bumps. And there's always something to learn from them. And are we going the right direction? Is the trajectory the way we want it to go? I think that's just so well said. Dave and I both love that you are active in promoting healthy couple and family relationships, however they may look. Where can listeners go for more information about all the great resources and information that you offer, Tammy and Jeff?
For me, I have a website, tammyhill.com. I have a podcast, Live Your Why podcast, and books. I've got a couple of books out, so you can find me all those places.
And don't her Instagram. Her Instagram's legendary.
It is.
Yes, it is, Jeff. Yes, it is. I'm a big follower, Tammy. My wife follows you. We love the books. The retreats, we're going to post all this information, listeners. You've got to go check out. Be sure to check in the show notes because we're going to list all the links where you can go and visit, get more information, amazing retreats and all kinds of stuff that they're offering. So
I also have an Instagram, but mine isn't amazing.
It's good information.
It's called Joyfully Within Your Means. So it's about finances. Joyfully Within Your Means. And then also with Tammy, I do a financial basic level one retreat of the basic financial things that you need to know to be happy in a family. It's kind of the best of, I taught family finance at BYU for to about 20,000 students. And it's kind of the best of that information. Also, we're collaborating now on a sex and money retreat. And so, you know, the two biggest thing that break up marriages are sex and finances. So we're going to try to do in one workshop kind of the best practices and things that you can adopt so that sex and money aren't stumbling blocks in your marriage.
Oh, that's so interesting. Sounds like another podcast, doesn't it, Dave?
Yeah, I think so. I think, yeah, when that is coming.
It would be so lucky to have them back.
Yeah, we could do a whole episode. I was one of those 20,000, just by the way, I was one of those 20,000 students, Jeff. Amazing listeners, you got to check out Jeff's stuff because he's a guru. He is experienced from the finance world. Was it IBM? Jeff, that you worked for several years and then came to BYU, so... Yeah, brilliant, brilliant mind.
So you were one of his students? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I take his class.
Cool. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
See, look at I did a good job.
You did a good job.
Yes, yeah, look at this.
And I'll have to say, I really wanted to somehow to lure you away from Utah State.
I don't blame you.
Yeah. Oh man, it was tempting. Yeah, lots of great times, great memories. Down at BYU. So thanks, Jeff, for all that you have done. And Tammy is adjunct, professor down there, right? You were teaching classes down there as well for several years.
Yeah, 10 years.
10 years, 10,000 students.
Wow. What a duo. Yeah, dynamic duo. That's what it is for sure. Hey, listen, I'd love to get your perspective on what makes for a stronger marriage connection. That's the title of our podcast. That's our aim, is to help people have a stronger marriage connection. Each of you, what do you think it is? What does it come down to for a stronger marriage connection?
You can go
first.
So I really believe, I think this is my philosophy. It's why I've called my podcast the Live Your Why podcast. That if you really are grounded and know who you are living aligned with who you want to be, you're going to be a great marriage partner. You need to do your own work to be able to thrive as a person and contribute that energy to a relationship. So I think a lot of it is up to you if your marriage is going to be happy or not.
And I would say, since you're talking about connection, I would say that the heart is to have a secure attachment to your spouse in the way that you connect with eye gazing, you connect with a physical touch, you connect with words of affection, you connect with all of the quote unquote romantic things that oftentimes go away after a while. And so I think connecting in that way to achieve a secure attachment is very important. So I would say it would be remember the little things. Remember the little things, and the big things will take care of themselves.
Love it. Yeah, so well said. Thank you. Another question for you. All kinds of tips and things that you shared today. Do you have we call it a takeaway of the day here on the podcast. Each of you have a take-home message as it relates to our topic we've talked about, remarriage, step-family living. What do you want listeners to remember, Jeff and Tammy?
I think just to remember, it takes time. It takes time. It's not going to be a remarriage and having a step-family isn't something that happens overnight. It doesn't even happen within a year or two. A lot of the research says it between 4 and 7 years until a step family, big blended family, or a small blend family. But anyway, that this type of a family actually gets cohesive. And that's kind of been our experience. And so there's so many times personally, I wanted to give up and I wanted, this was a lot more work than I had before. And I was so exhausted in many ways. And if I hadn't had that really clear personal revelation that this is exactly what God needed me to do, I know that I wouldn't be here. And I can say, I am so grateful I stuck it out. I'm so happy now. I've never been so happy. And I know it's because we worked so hard together to make our marriage work and to help our children succeed as best as we can. And so it takes time, but hang in there.
Mm. Wow. Well said. Yeah. What about you, Jeff?
I think I am a naturally optimistic person. I would say that when you're blending or you're having a stewed family, that you look for and celebrate the things that are going well. Give an outside, go out of your way, because there'll be plenty of things staring in your face that aren't going well, but go out of your way to look for the good, what's happening that's good, and then celebrating that good. When that stepchild for the very first time called you dad or something, just go out. And if you were a drinker, just sell it. Just something. That's a major.
So do you want people to go drink?
No. That's
yeah. Diet Dr. Pepper. That's Diet Dr. Pepper.
Oh, that's my thing. Yeah. Okay. That's good.
So that's what I would say. Give yourself permission to be unabashedly happy on occasion and not let the hard things overwhelm that potential joy.
Well, and to jump onto that, whatever you're focusing on is what your story is going to be, right? If you keep telling yourself, which is a lot of my problem, how horrible and how hard this is, it's going to be horrible and hard. If you're looking for things and savoring sweet moments, it's just going to be a lot better.
That's right.
Yeah. I love that. Celebrate even those small wins, right, Jeff? Yeah. Celebrate those little victories. Yeah, well said. Liz, what about you? What's your takeaway from our discussion today with Tammy and Jeff?
You know, I have kind of a takeaway / question, if you don't mind, Jeff and Tammy. So I can only imagine, I've heard this from other couples, that when you would observe Tammy making those emotional deposits for your children, it must have just made your heart swell. I mean, did it indeed then help your love for each other to watch her interact with your kids and vice versa?
For sure. I think that, you know, Tammy is a sexy person, but, and I think there's nothing more sexy for me than to see her caring for my children. I think that is so attractive.
That's what I was going to say. To me, when Jeff goes, just the other day, he went the extra mile. We were in Cancun and I was exhausted. My son that's single, everyone else was married, was out on the beach walking alone. And I wanted to have the energy to go walk on the beach with him, but I was exhausted. I told Jeff that. He went out and walked and talked with my son for a couple of hours. And I can't tell you what that did to my heart. I just love him so much for all he's done for my kid.
That is beautiful. That just makes such sense. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And dear Dave, what about you and your being able to be with your friends here? What's your biggest takeaway?
Yeah, man, I really enjoyed this time. I get the sense of this idea of compassion, of turning outward, having this outward mindset of holding on to each other, making time for each other. The getaways, I'm a big fan of that, as we talked about, because the hard times, they're hard. They're difficult. They're challenging. You maybe want to give up, but when you keep that bond close, that relationship, Jeff and Tammy, you're just examples. You're just such shining examples. But I want to make sure that our listeners do get the sense, and I know it's come across, this is taking work. Like what you're seeing is it's difficult, it's challenging, it's enduring, grueling. A lot of the things I'm sure that very personal things that you're not sharing behind the scenes, that this some long, difficult, dark days and nights, I'm assuming with this, but you've been there, kept it together because of the commitment, the priority. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have to say, honestly, if people could look on the inside sometimes of our family, they would realize we're not that great of examples. A lot of times we're not too shiny or squeaky clean, especially me. Jeff is practically perfect, but I swear I flip him off when I'm mad. I'm just an angry kind of person. And so it's not pretty. So you might see this together right now, but I'll tell you, there's been a lot of ugly times, and we're so grateful to be in a season right now that we're savoring.
Thank you. There's so many couples that I work with that I can't wait to introduce them to you and to this particular segment. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Raw and real and relatable. Yeah, Jeff and Tammy, thanks for taking time to join us today on this episode.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure and a very emotional experience too.
It's been a good one. Well, my friends, thanks for joining us on another episode of Stronger Marriage Connection. We'll see you next time.
And remember, it's the small and simple things that create a stronger marriage connection. Bye-bye now.
Thanks for joining us today. Hey, do us a favor and take a few minutes to subscribe to our podcast and the Utah Marriage Commission YouTube channel, where you can watch this and every episode of the show. When you hit the like button and leave a comment, your feedback helps us improve the show. And don't forget to share this episode with a friend. You can also follow and connect with us on Instagram at Stronger Marriage Life and on Facebook at Stronger Marriage. Be sure to share with us what topics you want us to explore or what you loved about today's episode. If you want even more resources to improve your relationship connection, visit our website at strongermarriage.org, where you'll find free workshops, webinars, relationship surveys, and more. Each episode of Stronger Marriage Connection is hosted and sponsored by the Utah Marriage Commission at Utah State University. And finally, a big thanks to our producers Rex Polanis and Alexis Alcott and the team at Utah State University. And you, our audience, you make this show possible.